Mr. Reitz, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, Ari Reikas with co-counsel Steve Reikas from the law firm Marks Claire Richards on behalf of the appellant Alan Ackley. I kindly ask for 3 minutes for rebuttal time. Thank you. And again, may it please the court. This is a case about a broken promise. It's a case about a breach of contract. In 1986, Mr. Ackley went to work for Greater Omaha Packing. He eventually became the comptroller there. And in 1989, he was provided a deferred compensation agreement. He signed that agreement. In 1989, Greater Omaha Packing funded a deferred compensation account and again funded it, added to the deferred compensation account in 1991.
So what was the nature of that account?
What was the nature of the account?
It was it specifically for your client?
The way in which Greater Omaha Packing, they contribute, there were several employees that received deferred compensation agreements. None of the agreements referred to one another. All the money was invested into one single deferred compensation account. Now, there were two key provisions to the deferred compensation agreement. The first is paragraph 6 of the agreement, and that paragraph said that Mr. Ackley's rights to deferred compensation would vest after 10 years of consecutive service or upon reaching the age of 60.
And did the district court decide that issue?
The district court did decide that issue and did decide that Mr. Ackley vested. There was a second key provision of this agreement, which was 7B, and the district and that provision stated that if Mr. Ackley was terminated before reaching the age of 60, and if he was terminated for any reason, the money in the deferred compensation account shall stay in there and continue to be invested. When Mr. Ackley reached the age 60, and 1 year later, in September of 2007, he was due deferred compensation. Unfortunately, Greater Omaha Packing refused to pay him the deferred compensation, arguing that he failed to be employed by the company while he was the age of 60. There's nothing in the contract that says that he needs to be employed while at the age of 60.
Did the district court decide that issue?
The district court decided on several occasions. First, there was a motion to dismiss, and the district court rejected GOP's argument that you had to be 60 while employed. Then on summary judgment, the district court rejected that argument again and found that the Greater Omaha Packing had breached the agreement. After summary judgment, there was a separate trial solely on the issue of mutual mistake, in which GOP argued that there was a mutual mistake, that the terms of the contract required that Mr. Ackley be 60 and employed, and they lost on that hearing as well. However, on the day of trial, the Greater Omaha Packing argued that paragraph 11 of the deferred compensation agreement made the vesting clause and the payment clause ambiguous, and the court agreed with that assessment, yet it never pointed out what the ambiguity in the contract was.
Well, what does paragraph 11's language that the company's interpretations and construction of any provision or action taken under this agreement, including an evaluation or the amount of recipient of the payment due under it, shall be binding and conclusive on all persons for all purposes. What does that mean? I mean, does that just give the company the power to say this agreement means whatever we say it means and you're stuck with it?
No, it does not give them that much power. What that paragraph does is it allows them to administer and interpret the contract. So it was up to Greater Omaha Packing how much money to put into the deferred compensation account. It was up to Greater Omaha Packing to decide how it should be invested. If there was an ambiguity in the contract, perhaps Greater Omaha Packing's opinion, perception as to what the meaning of the contract was, may have a role under that paragraph.
So what's binding and conclusive on all persons for all purposes? Something is.
Well, binding in the fact that they had the discretion to fund to fund the deferred compensation at all, but they cannot unilaterally go and change the written words to the contract. That would make the contract meaningless.
Well, that's my question. Does paragraph 11 make this whole contract illusory?
I do not think it makes it illusory. I think what the discretion that they are provided is how they go about managing and funding the agreement and whether to fund it at all. They decided to fund it in 1989. They decided to fund it again in 1991. Mr. Ackley continued to work for Greater Omaha Packing for 5 years, till 1994. That compensation was earned. The deferred compensation was given to him partly as a reward, and he continued to be employed and thereout. So the fact that the company had the ability to interpret its own contract didn't mean it could change the written words of that contract. It couldn't change, for example, the vesting clause from 60 to 70, and it couldn't change 7B that says, if employment is terminated for any reason, that the money shall be continued to be invested on behalf of Mr. Ackley.
Could it value the deferred compensation account as zero?
It couldn't value it at zero because all the money was in the deferred compensation account. The way in which the deferred Mr. Ackley's share could perhaps have been valued at zero is if the money in the account had taken, the investments had taken a dive, for example, and they became valueless. But when the court found that paragraph 11 allowed for its own interpretation of the contract, then they put on evidence inconsistent with the court's own orders. I mean, the court ordered that Mr. Ackley's rights to deferred compensation had vested. Once it's vested, you cannot say that he's vested in nothing. On the other hand, the court allowed GOP to put on evidence that if someone left after the age of 60, then Greater Omaha Packing devalued their interests to zero. Well, that's completely inconsistent with vesting.
What was the consideration for this deal?
The consideration was, first of all, the deferred compensation agreement was given as one, a reward, and two, there was consideration by continued employment. Mr. Ackley continued to work for 5 years. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Coyle, good morning to you.
Good morning. Excuse me. Give me a moment here. Well, good morning. May it please the court, my name is Mike Coyle. I represent Greater Omaha Packing. And what we're going to ask you here to do today is to affirm the verdict of the jury from the trial of this matter in the Douglas County District Court. Now, this case goes back to September of 1989. When Mr. Davis gathered seven members of the management and said, here's an agreement. We're under the terms of this agreement, you may qualify for deferred compensation upon your retirement. There were seven people involved in that agreement. And shortly after that agreement was entered into, after 1989, there was seven employees, and three of those employees, including Mr. Ackley, ultimately left Greater Omaha Packing. The other four employees either retired from Greater Omaha Packing, or the one person who is still a signatory to that agreement, Sandy Walker, still works at Greater Omaha Packing.
So first and foremost, none of this money is going to go back to Greater Omaha Packing. 100% of the money in the deferred compensation plan is going to go to Mr. Sandy Walker, who has now been an employee in his 70s, has worked for Greater Omaha for somewhere over 35 years.
So was the money commingled?
Yes. The answer to your question is yes. Mr. Ackley left the company in 1994, shortly within 5 years after this agreement was signed. He turned 60 in 2006. He filed this lawsuit in 2012, 18 years after he left the employee of the company. There were a whole series of pretrial motions in front of Judge Rettelsdorf.
But what did she decide?
Well,
it seems a little contradictory to say vested and then to say the contract's ambiguous at that point. It can be interpreted another way.
Well,
how
I think
do you
what
coincide
she did,
those two rulings?
I think that her rulings were actually entirely consistent. I mean, the reality is it was almost kind of a gotcha. He had turned 60. The agreement was poorly drafted. The fact of the matter is I think the intent was, is you're going to be rewarded for your loyalty and being with the company. But the technical terms of the agreement was, is that the instant he signed it, he vested. All they had to do was live to the age of 60.
Right.
And Judge Rettelsdorf came back and said, he doesn't have to put any proof on that. Under the terms of the agreement, he has vested. So the answer to your question is that was an issue that was taken away from the jury's consideration.
What was the legal significance of the fact of the money was commingled, or is that just color?
Well, the money was put in one account and invested, and I will tell you that what happened is, and I think it was a key part of the case, is that all the money was commingled. And then they used which was the denominator, and then the numerator was the number of employees that were entitled to the deferred compensation. So for example, if there were 7 employees entitled to it, they take their salaries, come up with that, divide it up to 100%, and then whatever percentage...
Does the contract tell us how to do this math?
That's the key. The contract was completely silent on how the money was to be apportioned. And that goes back to the issue at trial is Judge Rettelsdorf says, yeah, you're vested, but the burden of proof is on you to determine how much, if any, of that money that you're entitled to. And that's what the trial was about.
Was that a question of math, or was that a question of entitlement according to contract terms?
I think that was a question of computation, and the burden of proof was on Mr. Ackley to prove how that was done. Because Mr. Ackley was...
So then, is that the appellee's position? He's entitled to something if he can do the math?
I think that the appellee's position is that the contract is 100% silent, and it is completely discretionary with the company under the terms of the agreement.
What's the breadth of that discretion? How to do the math, or if we change our minds, there is no deferred plan?
No, I think that...
What is the breadth of paragraph 11?
Well, the breadth of paragraph 11 is to determine whether Mr. Ackley was going to be treated arbitrarily, capriciously, or in bad faith. And what the evidence was in this case is that Mr. Ackley was treated exactly like the other two gentlemen who left the company were treated, and they received no deferred compensation. For example...
Excuse me, what does that tell us?
What it tells us
let's unwind this to 1989. Was there a tax benefit to the company by doing this thing?
Well, I think that there was some requirements under provisions of ERISA to have some language
so
about vesting and some other things.
There's some ERISA features to this kind of thing, and they don't want to unwind it.
I don't believe so. I think that this was a straight breach of contract case. And I think, Your Honor, I think that the fundamental issue and the problem that has always been with this case is this isn't an automobile negligence case, but I'm going to compare it to that for this reason. If you prove negligence and the court directs a verdict or enters summary judgment, the plaintiff still has to prove their damages. And here, the court said, okay, you don't have to put on evidence that you're vested. And there was also a provision in there about a non-compete. Mr. Ackley went to work for Nebraska Beef after he left Greater Omaha. Judge Rettelsdorf determined that provision was overbroad, and therefore the jury was instructed affirmatively that they were not to apply that in their deliberations.
Are there ERISA provisions that would control the breadth of interpretation of paragraph 11?
No. No. And in fact, those were raised in some pre trial motions, and Judge Rettelsdorf dealt this strictly as a breach of contract case. But
what did the president of GOP testify to as to why Mr. Agnew was not entitled to any deferred compensation?
What Mr. Davis testified to is this was the formula that was used. So of the seven people that were there, as they left, the numerator continued to change.
So does that go to your argument of you have the sole discretion of interpretation of the contract?
Yes, because there was no methodology. Going back to the Chief Justice's question at the beginning, all the monies were commingled, and there was no methodology that was ever set forth in the four corners of the agreement as to how you would get the money.
So it could be changing throughout the entirety of the case.
But it did not.
GOP could decide any given day how they're going to formulate the division of the joint proceeds.
The answer to your question is yes, they had the discretion to make that decision.
How is that a mutual contract?
Well, I think that the...
How is there a meeting of minds?
I think it goes back to exactly what Your Honor, just the question earlier is that was the way the agreement was drafted, that there was no methodology as to how people got money after they vested.
Is this a binding contract at all?
Well, we cited two cases in our brief, Brozo and Noonan. We cited both of those cases, and one was a case against Oracle, and the other one was a case against Staples. It had the same type of language. And the answer is in the absence of being arbitrary and capricious or exercising bad faith, those provisions are enforceable. And here, in this case, Your Honor, Mr. Davis testified at trial that everybody that was in the program were treated identically. Here's an important fact. Mr. Ackley was actually the controller of the company.
What's the legal significance if they're all treated identically?
Because that's the methodology that was used. And I think that...
And then how did that fit into the arbitrary or capricious language?
Well, everybody was treated the same. So they didn't pick out Mr. Ackley for different treatment. And let me follow up on that. While Mr. Ackley was controller, he did the computations. When Mr. Sias and Mr. Ryan left the company before him, he changed the numerator himself. He did the calculations. So Mr. Ackley wants the benefit of, he's kind of talking out of both sides.
Well, he wasn't in charge of the agreement, the plan. He was the controller.
That's correct.
So he's
taking direction from the CEO, I'm assuming, at that point.
Yes, Your Honor, but in fact, that was the same template that was applied in the computations in
front
of the jury.
He's not the decision maker, though. He's the scrivener.
Well, he's not the decision maker, but everybody was treated equally. The problem that it causes Mr. Ackley is that at trial, the damage number that he presented to the jury included lumping all of their prospective interests into the pot of money, which increased his share. In other words, Mr. Ackley's claim showed that he was trying to take advantage of the fact that two other people who had left increased his percentage of the pot. So he took a very inconsistent position in front of the jury.
Is it possible that everybody could be treated equally and that treatment is still arbitrary?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because I think they applied the same template to everybody in this case. And here is what I think the key significance is.
Isn't the template really different than the terms of the vesting? The template is if you leave before 60, you're out. That's the template. Is that correct? Is that the ruling that the CEO made?
No. The court determined as a matter of law that Mr. Ackley was vested, but that was only one part of his burden. He then had to prove to the burden of proof was upon him to the jury. And if I could finish here for a moment, just for a few seconds. The burden of proof was upon Mr. Ackley to prove the measure of damages to the jury. He put a number up there that was over 60% of the total corpus of the fund. Yet the jury knew full well that Mr. Walker, who's still working at Greater Omaha for 35 years, is entitled to all of that money. So when the jury returned a general verdict in favor of Greater Omaha, they simply found that he didn't comply with his burden
of
proof.
So if the cheese stands alone, he gets 100%.
Pardon?
If the cheese stands alone, he gets 100%. If there's one employee left that qualifies,
that's correct.
Employee gets 100%.
That's correct. And that's because...
And what about Mr. Davis? Was he in this fund?
No. that of the seven people, the three that left received nothing. They were all treated the same. The other three that retired or died where they were still working for the company, from the company, all got paid. 100% of the money that remains in this fund belongs to Mr. Walker, who still, to this day, works for Greater Omaha Packing. None of this money will go back to the company.
What was the reason that the three individuals did not receive anything?
Because none of them retired from the company. They all left, including Mr. Ackley.
Where is that under the agreement?
It's not in the agreement, but that goes back to paragraph 11. That's how it was interpreted.
So again, that goes back to there's no mutuality of this agreement.
And I guess I'm not understanding when you say mutuality, Your Honor.
Well,
don't you have to completely swing for the fences here, and it's either none of this is enforceable, this wasn't a contract at all? I mean, isn't that what you're arguing paragraph 11 does?
Well, as I said earlier, and I didn't draft it, the agreement is poorly drafted in the respect that it doesn't contain a template on how monies are allocated, other than the seven people are divided in, and when you retired, you took a percentage of it, and that's how everybody who retired was paid. They were treated identically.
Isn't paragraph 11 inconsistent with definiteness?
Well, I think that, Your Honor, is that the key to this contract is that paragraph 11 is there, and just like the Brozo case and the Noonan case, it gave the discretion to the board to make these determinations. And in the absence of being arbitrary, capricious, or acting in bad faith, they're enforceable. And the key here is that Mr. Ackley was treated identically to every other person who left the employ of Greater Omaha, who did not retire from the company. So
what if everybody stayed to the end, but the company says, nope, we interpret this that nobody takes anything, we're treating you all the same, we're keeping you all the money. That's not arbitrary. Under your definition, everybody's being treated the same.
Well, I understand that, but that didn't happen here. I think if all these gentlemen would have stayed working for this company, they all would have been treated identically. And they were. Every single person who received payment, they used the numerator and the denominator analysis, and they received the payment when they retired. The three individuals who did not retire from the company did not receive payment. But again,
they were vested.
Understand. But it's like a motor vehicle collision. Just because there's a wreck doesn't mean the plaintiff is entitled to damages. The jury was instructed...
If you're vested and there's money in the account, aren't you entitled to some of that money?
Under the terms of this agreement, no.
Under paragraph 11 of the agreement.
That's correct, which is part of the agreement.
And which gives you the authority to change the agreement anytime you want.
Well, it didn't happen. But
it changed from 1989 until now.
Other than the fact that folks left, it did not. But see, here's the other significance of a general verdict, Your Honor. Mr. Ackley asked for over 60% of the money in the pot. I mean, this is pure speculation. The jury could simply have found that he didn't comply with his burden of proof. In addition to that, Mr. Davis described how everybody was treated identically at trial. So I think that with the general verdict form, he did not comply with his burden of proof. A verdict was returned on behalf of Greater Omaha. And all of this money is going to go to the one gentleman who's entitled to it, who still works for the company, Sandy Walker. So under a general verdict, I think the jury easily could have said, hey, you didn't give us any other methodology for computing this. He didn't prove his case. And we're going to ask that you affirm the verdict. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. 1 minute and 52 seconds.
1 minute and 52 seconds, Mr. Rikus.
Thank you, Your Honor. Well, we heard a lot there. The first thing we did not hear still is where is there ambiguity in the contract? That still has not been brought before this court, which is what opened the doors to all the confusion at trial. This GOP just argued that Mr. Ackley got treated like everybody else. That is a misnomer. There was one individual, Mr. Sias. It's not unclear whether or not he ever got a contract, and the facts were that he left shortly before the compensation package was completely put together. One other employee left, and that employee was Mr. Ryan, and he immediately went to work for a competitor. Mr. Ackley did not go work for a competitor within 1 year of signing of the termination of his contract. Mr. Ryan left voluntarily. Mr. Ackley was terminated. Moreover, they had separate agreements. Whether or not GOP has breached its agreements with Mr. Cyrus, if there even was one, or whether or not it breached its agreement with Mr. Ryan, are for Mr. Cyrus and Mr. Ryan to hand out. But their actions or lack of actions has nothing to do with Mr. Ackley and his contract. His contract does not refer to any other individual working for Greater Omaha Packing. And the contract provides specifically that money is to be invested in a deferred compensation account. It's not Mr. Ackley's fault that Greater Omaha Packing decided to combine all the money into one account. That was the discretion of Greater Omaha Packing. But just because Greater Omaha Packing had the ability to interpret and administer the contract doesn't mean it could change its terms. Council cited a case from Minnesota, the Bozo case. That contract had specific language that said that the company could change the contract at any time. That language is not in paragraph 11. And I see that my time is up. I noticed that council got a significant amount more time. If there are any questions, I'm happy to entertain them. But I would ask that this court reverse the decision of the trial court and grant Mr. Ackley deferred compensation consistent with the Nebraska Wage Payment and Collection Act.
What does the term interpret mean within paragraph 11?
It would mean that if there is an ambiguity, that their opinion of what the contract says would hold. It doesn't mean that they can change the terms of the contract. Interpretation and change are two very different things.
What is your position as to how the amount to which your client is entitled is calculated?
I think there are two positions. One, based on the plain language of the contract, he would be entitled to, as of 2007, the $98,130, which was within the deferred compensation account. And that is exactly what the contract says. Mr. Ackley did testify that based on the proportionate sharing, he was told in 1993, a year before he left, that approximately $18,000 in deferred compensation was attributed to him. Mr. Ackley testified at trial that if you took the gains and losses and had that share been protected, it would have been equal to $59,970 in 2007 when it should have been paid. And by the time of trial...
Does the contract say anything about a proportionate share?
No, the contract does not say anything about a proportionate share. Because
so is that an ambiguity that GOP gets to interpret?
No, it's not an ambiguity because the contract itself says money should be put in a deferred compensation account, and Mr. Ackley is entitled to what is in the deferred compensation account. That is not an ambiguity. That's a tough word sometimes. But that doesn't make it ambiguous.
Does that imply an isolated account?
It probably would imply an isolated account, but the fact that Greater Omaha Packing uses discretion to combine all the money into one account shouldn't be the basis for penalizing Mr. Ackley. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will go on to the next case of the day, then, which is O'Daniel versus Edquist.